Good evening and welcome to Aspira of Delaware Charter Operations Board meeting for the month of February. We do need to go into executive session as continue our strategic planning for the school. So if I can have a motion to move to executive session, please.
Motion to move to the executive session.
Do I have a second?
Second, Panic Stetson.
Thank you. All those in favor? Aye. Any opposition? Let's go ahead and move to executive session. This is earlier than usual, but we'll be promptly back to the public session at 6 o'clock. Thank you. Good evening and welcome to Aspira of Delaware Charter Operation February board meeting. We have been on executive session, so we're ready to come back to the public session. May I have a motion to move to public session?
Motion to move the public session, Durant.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second, Penix Stetson.
Thank you. All those in favor, say aye. Any opposition? Okay, so we're going to go ahead and move to the public session. Do we have any public comments? Anybody from the public?
There's only Mike Torres, one of our fine staff members, just joined us, but no one else from the public.
Okay, let's pay attention to that, given that you have been made a request.
Yep.
So welcome, Mike. Let's go ahead and move through the agenda to the approval of the meeting minutes and agenda. So we'll have that and immediately move to the team member spotlight. So Mike Torres is here for that portion of the meeting. And then we'll have to approve the amendments to the bylaws. We'll move into the finance report, and then the committee reports with development, DNI, and PTO as well as and the PTO, and then finish the meeting with the CEO report. Any amendments to the agenda?
Hey, Loris, I don't know if it needs an amendment, but I will be presenting the final operating budget with the financial report.
As part of the financial reports, okay. And maybe Luis, as part of the bond financing, maybe we can talk about then the building, the building piece.
Yep.
It's part of a subset of that. Okay, can you put the meeting minutes up and then we can approve both? Any amendments or corrections to the meeting minutes for the month of December, the month of November, given that we did not meet in December? Well, hearing none, do I have a motion to approve both the agenda as submitted as well as the meeting minutes?
Motion, Rolone Dow to approve minutes and agenda.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second, Brim.
Thank you. All those in favor? Any opposition? Agenda and meeting minutes approved. So we're gonna go ahead with the team member spotlight. Welcome, Mike. This is so exciting to have you. Thank you for your willingness to present at the board.
Greg, can you give me share capabilities so I can share Mike's slide?
Margie said that she has your presentation.
Okay, hold on.
All right, so I'll go ahead and get started. Once again, thank you guys for having me. I do appreciate that, and I won't take too much time. So a little bit about me. My name is Mike Torres. I have been at Aspira since 2016. In my current role, I'm the behavior interventionist at the high school, and I am also the athletic director over at the high school. Like I said, I started in Aspira 2016 as a paraprofessional. I approached Margie way back when and said, you know, what can I do to be a part of the athletic program here at the school? And because I knew that that's what I wanted to do out of college. And she taxed me with being a paraprofessional starting off because that role was already filled. And, you know, I took it and I ran with it. And since then, I've been very blessed, I'd have to say. So like I said, been here since 2016. And while I've been here, I've worn so many different hats. In 2018, I became a part of Greg's team as an operations specialist. So I moved from the education side over to the operations side, which was cool to see both sides of the building and how everything worked. But I helped him with transportation and any little thing he needed me to do as far as some stuff with Karen, helping Kelly Cruz out with different things that she was doing as well. But so that was a great task for me as well. And then in 2019, I became a behavior interventionist over at the middle school. And then I took on the role as athletic director then, which was great because, you know, when I first started, that was something that was something that I voiced that I wanted to be a part of. And I was able to attain that role. I was trusted with the role as well. And then in 2020, when Margie approached me about the high school and moving over to that campus, I was very excited for that. So yeah, those are the things that I've done here and I've been a part of. So I graduated from Winston University in 2016 with my sports management degree. And then over a couple years, I decided to take 1 year off. And then I obtained my master's degree in management. Margie, you can go ahead. So my current role in the organization is to handle all discipline behaviors at the high school. So the most important thing is building relationships with the kids. I've had plenty of conversations with Ms. Panchishan and Margie about, you know, behaviors of students and different things like that. But trying to prevent behaviors rather than deal with the discipline part of it is a huge role that I play. So trying to build those relationships with the kids. And then I'm also responsible for everything sports related. Even though it is an EPR position, it does take a big chunk of my day with different things, scheduling and buses and coaches and different teams and grades. And it's a big part of what I do on a daily basis, as well as the things that I do. With discipline. You can go ahead, Margie. And lastly, my goals and aspirations within the organization. Like I said earlier, during my time here, I've worn all kinds of different hats, and I've been a part of both the operations side and the academic side of Aspira. And each year, I've been blessed enough to receive new responsibilities and take leaps in growing. So, one thing that I do want to see myself into is the role of Dean of Students and being the behavior interventionist at the high school and being with these students on a daily basis. I do feel that it is warranted, and those are some things that that I really want to be a part of, is building more relationships, helping our students grow academically, socially, emotionally. So those are some things that I really want to see into fruition one day. And that's pretty much it for me.
So, Mike, I can't believe you did not mention Aquatimic and your baseball career. Come on, it's okay if you mention that.
Okay. So I'm also the head baseball coach over at Aquatimic High School. That role was given to me in 2019. And during that time period, Greg was my supervisor. And I remember coming to him and Margie and asking, you know, is this okay? Can I go be a part of this? And I've been blessed enough to see some kids through and put them in colleges and different things like that. And we've been to a couple state championships in the past couple of years as well. So definitely something that has helped me grow in building relationships with kids as well.
Hey, Mike, you sell yourself short, my man. I think you need to let, I'm going to let people know, this young man, first-time head coach in Delaware High School baseball, first-year championship, undefeated team, and then the next year, through a difficult year, went to the championship again. So, again, Mike, you're selling yourself short, my man.
Yeah, I've never been one to brag. So
you're very humble.
But it was very cool that he had a whole Aspira cheering squad in the bleachers when they won the state championship and then when they went back to the state championship the following year. So, you know, as a family at Aspida, we've supported Mike and his ventures outside of Aspida, and we were proud of him and to see him be able to live his dream and take the baseball team to the state championship. We're hoping that he can help build that same type of program at Aspida. But just to give you a little bit of background information, you know, I met Mike many years ago when he was a little boy playing little league baseball at Bear Babe Ruth. So that is the league that Greg founded. And that is the league where my boys played baseball. And then we got to meet Mike, and then travel ball was really where we really crossed paths. So he was a great baseball player. He played baseball for Wilmington University as well. So, but it's a great example of somebody who came to us and, like Mike said, started as a paraprofessional. That was the opportunity that was available, but Mike saw that there was opportunities and growth, and we were able to continue to see him grow and develop his skills and continue to give him new challenges. So, very excited to have him on the team. And he's been working really closely with Debbie at the West Campus to really establish those relationships with the students. As he mentioned, you know, it's not just reacting to behavior, but actually helping students learn how to deal with their emotions and conflict so that we don't have the discipline issues. But I have to, so Mike, you gotta tell the funny story. So Debbie shared with me the incident the other day in the bathroom. So just so that they get a taste of what, you know, what life is like as an interventionist.
Yeah. So first thing in the morning, I believe it was Tuesday, I see a bunch of boys going into the boys' bathroom, and I'm already like thinking in my head, like I always tend to think worst case. So I'm like, oh man, a bunch of boys going in the bathroom. Like, what could they be doing? I hope there's nothing. So I stood outside and, you know, I listened in for anything that I thought would go wrong. And there wasn't any commotion or anything like that. And so the bell finally rang, and I went into the bathroom after all the kids had gotten out. And I, you know, just went in to expect some things. And so I just really wanted to see if I like maybe smelled something or saw something out of place or whatever it was. And then I went to one of my informants, as I say, and I got some intel about what was going on in the bathroom. And so what was happening was there was one student, and he was basically giving a shape up to another student, and everybody that was in there was kind of just observing and were like kind of like in awe that like he was getting a nice little shape up in the bathroom. And so I brought that to Debbie, and I'm like, there's got to be something that we can do to provide this opportunity to the student that wants to, you know, like barber school might be something that he looks to when he graduates, but what can we do now? So me and Debbie have talked, and I think we're going to carve out some time either at the beginning of the day or during club time and kind of give him a little area where he can work one-on-one with students. But just, it was such relief that it was that and not anything else.
Yeah, you think the worst case scenario, high school students, you never know if it has to do with smoking or drugs or, but the nice thing is that we've got great kids and they obviously are talented, and we have a young man who's an entrepreneur and doing shape ups for kids in the bathroom. So we've got to embrace that. You know, like we talked about in August, right? We got to support our students' hopes and dreams. So we discovered one of the hopes and dreams of a student.
Yes, we did. Yeah. And it was very good and reassuring to understand that our kids are good kids. So
thank you, Mike.
Any other comments or questions for Mike?
Just this, Mike, the next time you do this presentation, if you don't have an accomplishment slide, I'm going to come and find you myself. It is the one thing that I will say about Black and Brown people. We don't like to point out our accomplishments, but there's no way that the things that you've done the entire time you were talking, I was like, is this the guy who, and you weren't even going to say it if Margie and Greg hadn't pulled it out. Dude, put your accomplishments in your slide. Like, you have done great things. Give yourself credit And it's not that you can't be humble, but let's put it out there for people to see.
That's great advice for Nate.
Congratulations.
It's not bragging, it's inspiring. Inspiring others.
You know what? And actually, it's probably a conversation I had just this past week. It's not bragging if it's matter of fact. Those are the facts. So it ain't bragging. You did it. So congrats. Pleasure to meet you, Mike.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much. Duly noted. I appreciate all the feedback. Next time, I definitely will put some time.
Well, but thank you, Mike, thank you so much for sharing your time with us and giving us the opportunity to get to know you a little bit better. Congratulations and best on the Dean of Students role, and I know you will do great. So thank you.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you, Mike.
Great job, thanks, Mike. See you.
Bye, friend.
Yes. I do want to acknowledge that we have a member of the public joining our meeting. I would like to offer the opportunity for public comment if it's so desire. Otherwise, you're so welcome to participate in our meeting. Please note that public comment is limited to up to three minutes to address the board. And typically we listen and take note and we'll do appropriate follow-up as needed afterwards. Typically we just listen. Any comments?
Just want to introduce myself. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, my name's Andrew Moore. I'm father of Peter Moore. He's a third grader in Senora Magana in Brandt's class. I just want to be more involved with the school as I can. And we love having our son go to Aspira. We're very pleased with everything. And we just want to be really involved parents. That's all. My wife isn't with me. It's just me right now. Mm-hmm. I don't think she even knew really until she popped her head in the studio that I was on this meeting. So just wanted to say hi.
Well, Mr. Moore, thank you for taking the time to join us this evening. And you are more than welcome to stay through the whole meeting. I get to hear all the details. We have a full agenda. So we're going to be going ahead with the financial reports and committee reports and finish with the CEO updates. So thank you for joining and glad that you're having such a wonderful experience for your family.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, let me just add, Mr. Moore's tried. I know it hasn't worked out, but he's tried to get on, I think, the last three meetings. So I'm glad you're able to join us. And please, sir, don't ever hesitate to reach out to me. I'm happy to send you the link anytime you need it.
Thanks so much, Craig.
Sure thing.
Perfect. So let's go ahead. Our next agenda item is approval of the bylaws. I have sent the documentation ahead. And kind of alerted people that we needed to complete that task today. For the most part, this is something that we've been talking about for several board meetings already from the perspective of looking into the association from the Aspira of Delaware organization. So our bylaws will be a standalone document and those they have a reference to that organization. So other than that, there's no other significant changes to the bylaws. We are taking the opportunity to increase the number of board members from 11 to 15. So that's the other update to the bylaws. And then finally, because we no longer have the appointments from Aspira of Delaware, the terms for all the board members are now 3-year terms up to renewal of another term of 3 years for a total of 6 years that you can serve on the board. So that was also the other clarification that was made to the bylaws. Are there any questions to the document that was sent? Are there any questions to the upgrades? Any discussion? Do I have a motion to approve the bylaws as presented?
I move that we approve the bylaws as presented. Rem.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Second. All those in favor? Any opposition? Excellent. Thank you so much. So we have updated bylaws, and now we can continue to move forward as Aspira of Delaware Charter Operations. Let's go ahead and move to the next agenda item, which is the financial report. And actually, we do have a couple items on the financial updates. We start with Luis with the bond financing.
So as you all got the note, we have officially closed on the property for the $22 million bond financing. So our high school is going to be well underway. You know, this is all recorded, so I want this to be memorialized forever. I just want to appreciate Greg and again, the broader building committee group and team and just the work. I'm telling you the amount of work that went into this. I thought, we were applying for, you think applying for a mortgage is a lot of work. Imagine one that's $22 million and the amount of people you have to talk to, how much paperwork, the back and forth. I have just continued to be thoroughly impressed by the team and just their tenacity. And again, the building committee, just express my true gratitude for your guidance and wisdom along the way. I really do appreciate it, but big milestone, very exciting. We should be very proud of the work and we're gonna deliver our students a really nice high school. So that's all the update I have. I would say probably one more thing. I do need a motion to officially dissolve the building committee. And going forward, the construction phase of this work will be managed under the operating committee. So that is my motion that I put forward. So the motion to dissolve the building committee and the construction of the remaining project will be reported out of and managed out of the operating committee.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor? Say aye. Any opposition? Excellent, motion carries. So thank you to the building committee and congratulations on securing the bond financing.
Yeah, one point, Lourdes, real quick, I do want to touch on is just for clarity, not clarity, I think we got the motion passed, but one point I do want to make up is that when we went to issue our bonds, we had an oversubscription, and this is credit to Margie and Greg and the team that managing the school and the story and the work. We had up to 82.5 million dollars of people who wanted to fund this. So we wanted 22 and we got over 82.5 million dollars of people who wanted to purchase our bonds, just to show you the amount of confidence that investors had in our school and in our story. So, you know, kudos to the team. It's a reflection of their work.
Luis, your work was fantastic as well. Your leadership, and I know, I think I sent an email out to the whole group the other day, but truly the building committee, the negotiations, no one has any idea the leadership that Luis provided. And I will tell you, he was often my sounding board. We spent a lot of time in the evenings chatting, and the guy's always there, and I just appreciate his partnership. So again, kudos to you. Okay, so can you see my screen, the financial report?
Yes.
All right, we are talking about December, so we're halfway through the year, 50%. Marticia, I gotta ask you a question. Do I need to change your name on here? I saw on the screen here.
Yes, I got married and last name is now Brown.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Wow.
You're supposed to share that stuff with us.
Thank you. All right.
I will make that change. So as always, we start with our revenue. So our budget here is 11.9 million. We have about 9 million. We're 75% for our state. For the local, the budget's 6.9 million. We have about 6.9 or 98%. So we're trending very nicely. And then you'll see the federal is right there as well. The budget for federal is 1.4. We have 1.3 or 95%. So again, we're 50% through the year. The budget, well, I should say this, I'm gonna give you an updated budget next after I finish this report. So we're still working on the preliminary budget with this financial report, which is typical every year. But the budgeted revenue was 20.2 million. We have 17.2 or 85%. So that's obviously favorable. I can tell you we're having an outstanding year. I'll get into the expenses in a few minutes, but just a quick recap here. Again, 50% through the year. The budget for expenses this year is 20.2 according to the preliminary operating budget. And we spent about 11.9 million through December, or 59%. And as I always mention, the unfavorable variance is duly noted down here. I did note, besides the annual debt service that we paid in July, we also have $412,000 in construction costs, which I'm happy to report will be reimbursed now that we got the bond finance. So that money will go right back into our operating funds. Expenditure variance is always 25% over, which I'll talk to in the expense detail. We did spend a little over $2 million in December. You'll notice that was in another three payroll months. We typically have three payroll months a year, and they happen to be in July and December this fiscal year. I actually think next year we have three, which happens about every 7 to 8 years. When we look at the line graph here, good news, our red line, which is what we want, is still below the blue line. So we are definitely not spending more money than we have. As far as the local funding update, again, it'll be updated with the final numbers according to the unit count. But as you can see, we're way over budget here. But again, it'll be 100% on the final operating budget. This was a preliminary budget, but we had 1,197 students. That was only our 100% enrollment. And we obviously are over that at 1,225 students. When we look at our cash position, that includes last year's carryover. So we had 22 million, we spent 11.9. That's our remaining balance as of the end of December, 10.3 million. And then this shows you what we have as far as what we've raised so far, and that's available for the high school. That's the budget or the actual and the remaining balance. So we really haven't spent any money. We're just getting ready to kick off the construction actually next week. This is the grant update. Again, you know, everyone's heard Lourdes and Lynn and all have been doing a fantastic job, but I wanna let you know that just for fiscal year 22, which is this current year, they've already raised with their great work $172,500. We take every bit we can get, but again, you don't know how happy that makes me. The work they're doing, I know they put so much time into it, but we can't discount this because they're just getting started. But this is all money that this is outside what we would normally get. So it's obviously fantastic and we're only halfway through the year. Okay, for our expense detail, as always, we talk about salaries up top here. 8.7 is the preliminary operating budget total. We are at 4.7 or 54%, but again, we had both our three payroll months have already hit the first 6 months of the year. Other employment costs or OECs, the budget's 4.8, we're at 2.3 or 48%. Total travel, which basically consists of our student transportation, that's the buses. 1.4 million is our budget. We're at 737,000 or 53%. I should have mentioned, as always, I have all the comments that would be considered a variance of 75% or more, which is 25% more than the fiscal year. All the comments on the right side of the page. When we get down to total contracted services, the budget's about 2.3 million. We have $750 that's encumbered. So the total with the encumbered money, total expenses for this category is about 1.6 million or 69%. And then we come down to total supplies and materials. The budget's a little bit over $1 million. We're at $644,000, or 59%. And then our capital outlay equipment, small line item, $35,000 is our budget. This $15,000 encumbered, that's basically for the Gator that we ordered, really for athletics and the West Campus. That should be in hopefully by March or April. But with that encumbered money, we're actually at $19,000, or 55%. And then total capital outlay property, this is the big one, includes our debt service, and you see the $412,000 for the construction that we are getting reimbursed. We're almost at 100%, we're at 95% a year, $1.8 million through the end of December. So again, grand totals based on the preliminary budget, $20.226 million our budget for expenses. With the $16,000 in encumbered funds, we're $11.87 million, or 59%. Again, we're doing great. As you know, we do straight line budgeting, so every month is equal. If you take away the debt service that we pay in July and the construction money, we would be well under the 50% for the year. So no concerns at all. Any questions on expenses or anything else on this report? All right, hearing none, then I will go into the operating budget. So again, for the new board members, it's typical for charter school in Delaware. We operate on a preliminary operating budget for the first 6 months. We typically base that budget on 100% enrollment. As everyone knows, in 11 years, we've never been at just 100% enrollment. We're always over, so it's always conservative. And the funding that we get, the preload from the state and the for local funds is based on, I'm sorry, for the state funding is based on the May 1st count. So now that we had the September 30th count, our numbers are obviously updated, which will be reflected. I will update this page to reflect Marticia's actual last name now. But we talk about, before we get into the actually revenue and expense detail, it's important that everyone understands the key assumptions that we put into our budget. And again, this is posted, this is given to our funders, like Margie was saying, we share a lot of information, but this is all public knowledge. It's all posted online. So right off the bat, number one, we actually do have 1,225 students, which is well over 100%. So that's based on our September 30th count. Revenue projections include last year's carryover of about almost $5 million. State-funded projections are based on the actual funding summary, which is off the state system, which is based on our unit count, which is based on our enrollment. Then our local school district funding projections are based on the actual charter bill that has been published and sent out to all the districts. Number five, the revenue projections do include the $658,000 in ESSER funding that we did get this year, the ARP money, and then it's about $600,000 in awarded grants and capital campaign donations, which we'll get into in a few minutes. And then as everybody knows, this has been a great year for us here at Aspida because we now have every team member is paid on 100% of the Christina School District scale. So there's no more, you know, 6 year wait to get to 100% of that scale. And then I want to note here also expenditures include increase in bond debt, which we just closed on. So I was able to get those numbers in accurately. No projections. They're accurate numbers that'll be projected in the expenses. This is important because this is something that Luis and I, we love this budget model. It's worked for us for 11 years. We follow it, but these are our targets. And it says 22 because it's fiscal year 22, but these are our actual budgeting targets every year as a school that we operate in. As long as we continue to do what we're doing, we're going to continue to be sound financially, and that's the key. So over here is the actual, I have it highlighted. Again, they don't, I don't include in revenue calculation the local donations, construction funds, or grants. We don't want to skew the numbers because we're, with all these donations and things like that, some of these things obviously are not guaranteed. So we try to stick to known funding. So this gives a true depiction of where we're landing with these certain categories. So as you can see, salary and OECs, well within range. We typically are 67-68%. And again, we're going to be there again this year. But you'll see that we're well within line here. Even with the increased debt, right now this year, we're only going to be at 8%. Student transportation, again, very consistent every year we do this. And then the remainder, which basically is all the other expenses, falls to 17%. So any questions on assumptions or notes or the pie chart or anything like that before I get to the top level summary, which will start with the revenue? All right, here are no questions, I'm gonna move on. Okay, so this looks a little different than the financial report that I always present, but really it's the same thing. Here's our enrollment, and this is the column that we're gonna be paying attention to. I obviously have, we like to see this for trending and compare based on enrollment, what we did last year in the previous year. But it's column J that we're gonna really be talking about. Really what I wanna point out to, I have the 8.3 million here in state funding highlighted. You'll see my note that just popped up. I hope, do you see the note pop up when I click on it? Maybe not, but anyhow, the funding summary.
We see which it. Is, yes, we can see it.
Okay, great. So just so you, I know you don't think I make up these numbers, but we have supporting documentation. And what I was talking about earlier, the funding summary. So if we add up all the lines that are on column B, the account code, 05213, it's 9.24 million. That is our unit count formula. That is our main state funding, which is all driven by enrollment. I'm not gonna touch on every line. It's just, I can answer any questions. I'm happy to answer questions, but I don't wanna bore everyone to death here. So I really wanted to point that note out. Basically our funding is based on our enrollment, which drives the unit count, which drives our state funding. There's obviously some other buckets here as well, but our subtotal state right now, for our final operating budget is going to be about 11.59 million. And then the next category, which is local, which is exactly how I present the financial reports. We always talk about state, local, and then federal funding on the revenue side. So it stays in line, but I've obviously broken it out. The top line here, school district local fund transfers, you'll see the note that just popped up. So to the right of that, you see enrollment breakdown. Can you see? I hope you can see that. I have it highlighted, but that shows every school district and the number of students that we get. Lourdes, can you see this over here on the right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, great. So what I'm trying to say is this enrollment breakdown is updated now. That will be updated on our financial reports going forward. This is the total revenue, which is how I get this number, but that is all driven again by the enrollment and the reports that are available to us and have been shared to the school districts. The other local line, it's really money that we generate at the school with our programs, but also I mentioned we are going to get reimbursed the $415,000 for the two payment applications that we paid prior to funding, which was for all the engineering work and design work that Nolan did. So we should, I think we'll have that wire. Actually, I think it hit tonight, so we should see it tomorrow. So then we'll get it into the state account. So that this number is high. I just want to point it out. It's because of the $415,000 that we're going to get refunded or reimbursed, I should say. The big change I think, again, just to remind everybody, the ECDC, because it's now outsourced, we don't really pick up revenue. We don't also have expenses either, so it's a wash. But we do get 2% quarterly on all our utilities. But I did want to put in, you know, we will get a little bit of revenue, and that's per the agreement with the owner of the program. So subtotal for local, you'll see on the budget going forward, is going to be $8.3 million. And again, I've got a lot of line items here, so if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to answer. Otherwise, I'm not going to talk about each line. Then the last category, again, is federal. It's just how we do the financial reporting. The federal really consists of your consolidated grant, which we get. We are a Title I school, but your consolidated grant basically is all these lines here, all the way down to CTE Perkins, which is Correct Technical, which we have at the high school now. I should have mentioned all the red, all the items in red is actually carryover. That does not add up in our totals here, but it does show down here in the almost $5 million for a carryover. So subtotal, which I mentioned earlier, we did get the ARP funding, the remainder of the ARP funding or ESSER funding because of COVID. This year it's $658,000, so that's there. But overall, the total for federal this year is going to be $1.4 million. So our grant total for revenue, which is all new revenue, I should say, this year, starting with July 1, going to be $21.3 million. With our carryover, which is here, the $5 million, it's 26. I really wanted to point, I'll talk about expenses in a minute, but I'll let everyone know the error is here. That was our carryover last year. And you'll see we're going to increase our carryover, I'm projecting, by about $181,000 this year, which is obviously a great thing. So I'll get into expenses on the next tab, but in a nutshell, I'm projecting $21.1 million in expenses. But again, we're going to be increasing our carryover, as you can see down here, by $181,000. So I can tell you we're going to be in great shape again. And especially as we get more grants in, but no pressure on us. Any questions before I jump over to expenditures? I know I'm going fast. All right, hearing none. Okay, so this is let me make it a little bit smaller. This is a breakdown, excuse me, of the expenditures. This actually shows, just like the financial report is going to show as well. We're talking about column J. So I've updated everything. I do a lot of trending, and obviously, you know, we've had some higher since we started in August, which is typical. But if you have any questions as I run through this, please don't hesitate to ask. But the same order that we talk about in the financial report, so total salaries, I'm projecting $8.9 million for other employment costs or OECs, about $4.8 million, but grand total, $13.7 million. For the total travel, again, I mentioned this, I always mention the financial report, this whole category is almost 100% student transportation. We obviously have student field trips up here, athletic travel, and then a little bit more travel for training and things like that. But 1.4 is our budget, 1.4 million net. And then total contracted services, there's a lot of line items here. You'll see that the equipment leases, the building office space. I'll point out here that we actually are done paying that because we no longer have the lease of the building. So that was a cost that was included in this line initially. So we'll have a half a year's expense that we have to show, but we're basically done paying for it. And the same with the investment loans that we had before that were paid off with the bond finance. Those loans, remember, helped us do the phase one construction of the high school. I don't know if there's anything else in this broad category, but I have a total of $2.6 million for contracted services. Then we get down to supplies and materials. I got us coming in at about $1.3 million. And then just a little bit of a capital outlay here, $49,000. Here is the Gator. I believe that's what's been shown on the financial report. If I remember, it's about $15,000 that we have encumbered for that one piece of equipment. And then down here is the big category, the big expense category that has total capital outlay property. So you've got, as you see in this line here, it's the construction's included in here, then the bond debt service and the private investment interest. As you can see in the note, I have it all broke down, but I added the debt service. So we added for this year, because of the timing and the way we were able to capitalize some interest initially to allow us to build the enrollment at the high school, we're gonna pay $290,814 more in debt service this year on top of the original $1.3 million that we've already had for the East Campus that we've been carrying for the last several years. So grand total, all categories, $21.16 million. So we have a $21 million operating budget this year. Again, this is all posted online. We send it to the funders. And when I say online, I mean it's on the website. I also put all the reports on Board on Track. And if you ever have a question, please don't hesitate to ask me. But I can certainly answer any questions right now if you have it. $21 million. We have grown.
Not quite significantly, I would say.
All right. That is my report.
Any other comments or questions? Otherwise, I need a motion to approval of the financial reports.
Motion to approve the financial reports as presented.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second, Rem.
Thank you. All those in favor? Aye. Any opposition? Okay. Financial reports approved. We're going to go ahead and start with the committee reports, and we start with development. Marisa?
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I'm going to keep it very short and sweet because Greg actually covers a lot of the stuff. A lot of what's going on right now with the development committee deals with the grants, and we've been awarded several grants as covered by Greg. And then as Margie mentioned very briefly and during the executive session, the first meeting of the Lourdes,
strategic planning.
Yes, thank you. That was earlier this week, and it was wonderful, and there were a lot of wonderful ideas shared. And Tony Allen has agreed to serve as our chair, and there's a lot of really exciting people that are involved on that committee. And so more information will come. It's going to kick off with the friends and family portion of the fundraising coming up. And then the only other, the just sort of, again, trying to keep it brief, the other thing that was discussed at the last development committee meeting is the development committee's objectives that came out of our strategic planning session from over the summer. We had two objectives that were assigned specifically to the development committee, and I just wanted to give the board a little bit of an update on what we're thinking, if there's any feedback at all. If not, we'll continue to churn, and then we'll present a more fulsome report to the board for more formal feedback. But our first objective was to create three initiatives to enhance the immersion experience for students by increasing the exposure to the target language. And so we had come up with four different ideas or categories of ideas for that. One was what the clubs that are already in place encourage sometimes for the clubs to only speak in English and other times for the clubs to only speak in Spanish, because we understand that people who primarily speak both languages are involved, but they often then sort of group off and then, you know, into the whatever their, you know, their primary language is. And so this would be a way to encourage everybody to communicate with one another. Bringing in dance troupe and other cultural events, which is hard to do now because of COVID. Doing plays and musicals in Spanish. And then developing a school calendar with different events to help support the objective, raise the level of awareness. And then our second objective was create parent caregiver support framework around biliteracy, multi-language. And so we met with Wanda from the Parent Resource Center, who went over the things that the Parent Resources Center or the Family Resource Center is already doing. There's been a big focus around trying to maintain programs that are in place prior to COVID. Prior to COVID, there was a nutrition class. There's a hope that that will be done in person. And so stay tuned for when that will be continue. There's financial literacy class for families. There's adult English language classes, various meal programs. But we're gonna work, because I think that the concern that was raised at our strategic planning session over the summer was the concern that English speaking parents don't have the resources to help their kids with the Spanish language homework and the Spanish language aspects of the school. And so that's something that we're going to continue to try to develop as part of the development committee, and then bring back suggestions to the board on how to do that and how to sort of boost up the Family Resource Center so that the primarily Spanish speaking families and the primarily English speaking families can receive resources. So I don't know if anybody has any questions or any suggestions that we can add and then, you know, sort of kick around more at the development committee level before we come back with a more formal recommendation and report for the board.
Just one quick suggestion. This had come up earlier in our strategic planning in August, the idea of utilizing parents, like volunteer parents, to kind of help with the homework stuff on either end of the language.
So my understanding that specific objective was assigned to the PTO. So, you know, was assigned to Anna and the PTO part of the board. So we have not been focusing on that at a development committee level. However, we're happy to sort of take on a part of that, or if Anna wants to join one of the development committee meetings sometime to discuss that objective specifically. But that we have mentioned that in the development committee. But then when we went and actually looked at the chart that we put together at the strategic planning, that was something that was assigned specifically to the PTO.
Any other comments or questions for Marisa? Great. Look forward to further updates and moving forward. Glad that you're keeping the goals and objective for on the front center.
Well, I have to say Lynn is a big part of that too. So Lynn keeps us on track, the development committee. I don't want to take any credit where she deserves it.
Absolutely. Thank you. D&I, Rebecca?
Yes, so we have our first book discussion meeting on February 1st. So Margie has generously volunteered to moderate the discussions of Stamped by Jason Reynolds and Ibram X. Kendi. And so Margie has given us like two different, you should have in your email, the invitations to two different time slots you can choose from to discuss the first portion of the book, and then we'll be going from there. So excited that that's starting. And if I could share, screen share for a second, I'll just share Deanna Yancey's report, her DEIB report. Thank you. Just a sec. Okay. All right, so she's the organizational culture manager, at Aspira, and she just outlines really nicely for us all the different activity that's been going on in January. So the Justice Pack, the K through second grade group, they're updating their bulletin board and also created a fundraising project. Operation Justice, which is third grade students and up, are learning about censorship in Cuba, and they drafted a newsletter. I put the link in the chat, and also called Congresswoman Lisa Blunt Rochester. The Social Justice Committee, which is LAAA team members, discussed language access, in particular thinking about barriers in IEP meetings. Team Liaison held the first round of DEIB chats with grade level teams focusing on holidays and traditions. And the roundtable, which is comprised of students, staff, parents, board members, all our stakeholders, has divided into two subgroups right now, a curriculum subgroup, which looks at, well, at this in January, looked at second grade's Women's History Month and Black History Month lessons. And then the code of conduct subgroup was looking at the dress code section of the document to see about any changes that might need to be made. And for the DEIB leaders, the virtual equity conference planning is underway. I've put a link in the chat for registration information as well. And there have been two new student voice groups established at the East Campus. So the middle school students have organized both the Black Student Union and a Gender and Sexualities Alliance. And that is the DEIB report.
Comments or questions for Rebecca? I don't want to make a point around the equity conference. I think this is certainly something open to all the board members. And I think it would probably would be good if you have the opportunity and the time to participate. So please do pay attention to that. The registration is open. And I think there's a morning session. There is different sections for the afternoon and then a closing session. So if you have the time, it would be probably good if you can participate in any one of those
sessions. And you can schedule according to those sessions. And I would just put in a plug that the second part of the morning session is a panel, and we've got four amazing people joining us for this panel discussion. And that is Bebe Coker, our very own civil rights leader. And we have Jarrell Green, the superintendent of Red Clay. We got Maria Matos, and we have Paul Herdman from Rodel. And, you know, I met with them the other day to sort of prep for the discussion, and I'm really excited. I'll be the moderator. And, you know, they really are looking forward to having a very brave conversation about equity and education. So if you can't join us for all of the whole day, if you could at least make time for the panel, that would be great.
Rebecca, in the chat, people are asking if the link can be emailed. So let's do that.
Yeah, no problem. Okay.
Are you going to do it, Rebecca? You got it, right? Okay, thank you.
Okay, great. Any other comments around D&I? Excellent update, Rebecca. Thank you. PTO, Anna?
Hi. Not much to report. We were not able to hold our January meeting due to our school being virtual during the second week of January. But in December, we did have our first fundraiser since COVID shut down. And I think it went pretty well. We did Moe's taco dinner kits. So, and a lot of our staff was great in contributing to our fundraiser. So a lot of our teachers went home with dinner that night. I thought that went great. So we're looking forward to doing it again in a couple months. And that's pretty much it. Our next meeting is February 9th at 6:30 p.m. at school. We're gonna look at fundraising. We're still looking at movie night. I spoke with Jose briefly this week. about maybe doing a PTO dance for middle school, eighth grade. So those are things that are coming up, but I should have more for us in February. Okay, thank you.
And I want to thank you for your leadership. I understand that you were you took the lead on that fundraiser, and it actually was a really good fundraising idea. I took advantage of it too. And because, you know, remember back in the day when you guys would sponsor like Chick-fil-A, and we would all meet in Chick-fil-A and we would take over the whole restaurant, you know, but now with COVID, this was this whole takeout option. And I thought it was awesome. Mo's did a great job on how they packaged it up. And I mean, it definitely fed a family of four with no problem. It was awesome.
Yes. And it was pretty easy. So we handed out, it was only three of us, I mean, volunteering, so still plenty. So Mike, myself, and Melanie Winters, which she's very involved also, we were handing it out. But it was, I mean, easy fundraiser. So, yes. More to come, hopefully. Yes.
Excellent. I know I was disappointed that the timing didn't quite work for me because I was just not available to pick up. So, but I would have gladly gone to order from Moes as well. So, excellent. So, Margie, we're to the last agenda. So, see your report.
All right. Let me see. Okay. So we had We had the spotlight of Mike, and so thank you so much for giving him that feedback. I think, you know, Renee, you're right on point. You sort of took me back to our MBNA days when we used to coach the college students in the Thurgood Marshall internship. But yeah, I think that it's always valuable for us to give our team members an opportunity to present and to really grow. That was great. Enrollment. So we are in good shape for moving forward with our enrollment process. The choice period closed on Wednesday the 12th, and we had received 801 applications by that point. And as you can see from the chart, you know, we continue to receive applications after the choice window has closed, but we only include those that met the deadline for the and for the lottery. The lottery, by the way, is actually tomorrow. It is electronics. If you remember last year, because of COVID, we got, you know, we were sort of forced into trying this electronic option, and it actually worked really well. So we're going to continue to do that. It takes just a few minutes to complete, and then we'll be able to notify families of the outcome by the end of February. And then the choice decision date is March 25th. And what we've done is we synchronized our re-enrollment process with this timeline. So the families that are currently enrolled, the students that are currently enrolled in our school, their families receive the re-enrollment letter, which basically is asking, you know, is your child returning next year? And we also gave the March 25th due date, so that they can truly make an informed decision. And, you know, we feel that the information that we get then by March 25th is pretty solid as far as like what enrollment is looking like. And it gives us an opportunity at that point to then either continue to make them aware of other options. We'll be able to go to the families on the wait list and make sure they're aware of our virtual program as an option. So it just, a lot of things will happen after that date. One thing that I had shared with you in the last meeting, and I just wanted to continue to do that because we were monitoring that this as a leadership team, is just looking at the application volume. As I mentioned to you, the year of COVID, you know, everybody that has choice, you know, whether it's a school district or a charter, we all saw a dip in the application volume. And so you can see there that, for us in the, when we, for the 2021 school year, because we were opening up the high school, we were bringing in more sixth graders, you know, we did receive over 1100 applications. The following year though, the 21-22 school year, it went down to 735. And now for this coming school year, because we're always, you know, enrolling for the year ahead, it was 801. So, you know, we feel that it's leveling off. You know, we definitely had that peak in the 2021 year, but you know, definitely the expansion to the high school contributed to that. And also the fact that we added another class to our sixth grade also contributed to that. So I feel good that, you know, we're stabilizing and enrollment application flow is back to where it should be.
Hey, Margie, yeah. Just actually, so this is more of a compliment. I know we went through this, me and Brittany and I took LJ through this process of enrolling and doing all that. And I just want to say that your staff following up, making sure that people are connected and have done all the right things to register at their local school, that their feeder pattern, that whole process. I had heard it before from parents and now I'm going through it. Just want to say that you guys had to alleviate a lot of the stress for Brittany and I to make sure we were doing things correctly. And I can tell you right now, she definitely appreciated the follow-up calls because she was just sharing those things with me. So just kudos to the team and the awesome process.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. That is good.
I agree. It was definitely a process, but I felt very supported.
Wow. That's great. You know, it shouldn't be so complicated, right? But that's great. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you. Culture and climate update. So as you heard, you know, Mike gives us the report from the West Campus, Kathleen from the East Campus, but a lot of great things happening. You know, as I said before, the culture and climate team, obviously they deal with discipline, but it's not just reacting to discipline. It's actually being proactive and really helping to support a climate where students are able to just learn great people skills and interpersonal skills and how to deal with conflict and showing appreciation. So, you know, we had the bus safety week and there were some contest winners and they got to have, you know, some fun time and snacks and actually interact with the head of school as well as with the bus drivers. And, you know, I love the fact that in our school, our students do have the opportunity to build that relationship with the bus drivers. It's just not just a stranger behind the wheel. It's somebody that they actually interact with during the school day. And I think that really makes a difference when you see like the numbers of referrals on the bus and the behavior that we have on the bus. You know, it definitely does have a positive impact on that. And so speaking of discipline, as always, I give you the discipline report. Now that we have two campuses, we're continuing to track it separately so you can sort of see where there's any trends. You know, the good thing is that our trends are good. Our behaviors are you know, definitely within reason. Like the story that Mike shared with all of you, you know, even when we think that we have like a major situation on our hands, we have to sort of laugh at ourselves and say, you know, wow, okay, that was just a kid trying to give haircuts. But, you know, I think overall, I feel that there's been a lot of focus and I feel that our students feel supported in our schools and they're children, right? So they're gonna make mistakes. They're going to act out at times, but you know, I do feel that between our culture and climate team, our teachers, our administrators, you know, taking that restorative approach and helping students sort of think through and walk through that process so that they are able to regulate their emotions before they actually escalate into something big. So discipline looks good. Obviously January, definitely the numbers are low because if you recall, you know, we were not able to come back in person as we had planned on January 3rd. We ended up having to go remote for those 2 weeks. And then we came back on the 18th of January. And so far, by the way, things are looking good. You know, I was interviewed the other day by Newark Post. The reporter was calling different schools and just asking about, you know, going remote. And one of the questions he posed to me was, you know, why did you guys go remote and Christina School District didn't go remote? And I said, well, you know, the good thing about our state is that we do have local control. So every school district, every charter is able to make decisions based on their community. So, you know, I applaud the fact that a school district was able to stay in person and not have to go remote. Unfortunately, in our community, we had so many infections that it just was going to become a safety issue to continue to be in person. And so, and we made the decision, you know, that Sunday, that Saturday, Sunday, and then we had all the team members get tested. And sure enough, by the end of that week, we had even more infections. So if we hadn't made the decision when we did, we were gonna make it then probably, I mean, we would have maybe opened for a day and we would have had to then close because all those, all that testing that happened on that day would have then forced us to have to go remote. So it was unfortunate and we always hate having to make that inconvenient decision for our families. But I think ultimately we were able to get over the hump. In hindsight, the one thing that I regret is that I wish we would have just planned that like we did the previous year. You know, the previous year in August, we told our families that we would be going remote after winter break because we were at the peak of COVID. But, you know, after vaccinations became available, I think all of us sort of felt this sense of relief that, wow, we're getting past it. And, you know, we just did not think that it was going to be as bad as it is again this winter. So but live and learn. And now things are going well. We're back to doing the testing every week. We're actually requiring that all students and all team members get tested for the month of January. So everybody's been getting tested every week. So it's been great that we've been able to catch any additional infections, but definitely it is not to the point where it is hindering our ability to stay in person. And the other thing is the state has provided, I'm sure you probably saw it in the paper and the news, but the state was able to get, you know, secure thousands or of the not the N95 or the KN95 mask. And so they divvied them up to all the schools. So we got our shipment. And that means that we were able to give those masks to all the team members and as well as sixth graders up to high school because they are adult sizes, but just another level of precaution. And then I had each of the heads of school that give their updates. I like being able to share that with you sort of in their language and their words. From the East Campus, you know, we had the 2 weeks of remote. You know, we allowed teachers a couple of days to do some preparation and do some planning, and then we were able to then go synchronous. It was mentioned earlier on January 14th, we had our first biliteracy conference, and it was amazing. This was an idea that was sort of talked about like 4 years ago, and you know, I felt it was very ambitious. But I knew that the team was really enthusiastic about doing this and they made it happen. And I have to give a lot of credit to Rosa Alisea, who's our biliteracy instructional coach. She really, you know, did the heavy lifting to make it happen. And she had just an amazing lineup of speakers and it was very inspirational. I mean, I personally was expecting to be inspired because usually, you know, looking at the speakers, you knew that they were going to have these great messages. One thing I didn't expect to learn though, was that we really did get some really tangible ideas on how we can strengthen our program to ensure that our students are achieving biliteracy. And so that was really cool. And so now we've taken those ideas, we met with our team leaders and now we're planning out the next steps. So that's very exciting. And then the West Campus, you know, they had a nice little social event before the winter break. You know, they would have been coming back from winter break and doing exams. Obviously, going remote sort of changed that schedule. But now the semester started. The second semester started on the 18th. One thing that we had committed to when we opened our high school is that, you know, our students need to complete 20 hours of community service before they graduate. It's one of their graduation requirements. And one of the things that we do is that we build in days of service in the calendar. And one of those days was going to be January 18th, the day after Martin Luther King's birthday. Unfortunately, because We had just come back from being a remote and we weren't able to plan the offsite events that we had scheduled, but instead the students have actually been participating in projects in school. And I went over there the other day and they were showing me their projects. They're actually making these blankets and waterproof mats for the homeless. And if you go into one of our social studies teachers' classrooms, they're piling up and the kids are just sitting there, you know, just proudly making these blankets, sort of like a quilt type of idea where they're piecing together these different pieces of material. But, you know, really taking pride in the fact that they're doing something good. And that was the whole intent of creating that requirement, right, is that we want them to understand how to give back. They had their open house last night and they have some additional events coming up, which is exciting. I think we're starting to really feel sort of that school spirit and the students coming together and feeling connected with one another and having these things to look forward to as part of their high school experience. We also have sports in the middle school. We had basketball and cheerleading. And, you know, we're continuing to build our team. It seems like, girls are doing really well at the high school compared to the boys. And at the East Campus, I mean, middle school, but at the high school, the boys season has been really tough. You know, as you can imagine, as a brand new high school, we knew to sort of expect this is that, we have so many freshmen and sophomores. That's, you know, so we're playing a JV roster. And, you know, it's very competitive. And so we're hoping that they just continue to have the perseverance to stick in there and sort of push through the frustration, because it's not all about winning, but we know that it can get really frustrating when you don't have a win. So the season's coming to an end, but it's been great that we were able to have cheerleaders. And I think it's really cool that, you know, the girls basketball squad and the cheerleading squad both had an eighth grade scholar on the squad, which if you recall, you know, we started that scholars program. So we have a class of eighth graders at the high school and they have the opportunity to either play up with the high school students or they can actually play down with their middle school students. So it's neat to see that we have some students that are doing one or the other.
Right. And Margie, just from and this probably is more related to COVID. I mean, the number of games played this season, aren't even close to a regular season. So it also sounds like, it also looks like games were canceled as a result of, you know.
They were. And you know what? Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, COVID was an issue, Luis, but you know, another thing that was sort of COVID related, but more bus related, we had some games where, you know, we were the home team and the other school had to cancel because they didn't have a bus driver to bring their kids to our school to play. Like, so, you know, between COVID and the bus driver shortage, you know, it's really hurt, their schedule. So, you know, I think that's the other thing is that we want to be sure that we continue to give these students an opportunity to build their skills and build their talent, because, you know, we want them to have success, you know, and it's going to take a little bit of time, but.
That's going to be a huge component for the high school, right? I mean, that's what everyone remembers in their high school memories is the, you know, and this is just all those things out of control. Thank you for that context. I didn't realize the bus shortage was a piece of it either. And that makes it make sense.
And, you know, just so you know, because once again, really proud of, you know, the fact that our team comes together and we don't have that issue because one of our PE health teachers, David Freed, who's one of our pioneers, he's been with us since the beginning, since day one. He is now the driver's ed teacher over at the high school. He actually, a couple of years ago, went and got his license to be a bus driver, specifically to drive the activity bus, so that he's the one that transports our kids to the games. So we've never had to cancel a game because we didn't have a bus or a bus driver to get them there, because David Freed has been our in-house driver. So just another example of how our team has really stepped up and they just get creative, right? You know, whatever it takes, we wanna make sure that students get the experience. You know, the other thing, the reason I'm very strong about these types of programs is that it does serve as a motivator too for our student athletes. They know that they have to keep a certain GPA in order to be eligible to participate. And so, you know, we definitely make sure that they know that and that they're constantly reminded of that. And you know, we support them through the process, but they've got to be held accountable. So, you know, I know for myself, for my sons, it definitely helped to get them through school and keep them on track because they always wanted to be able to play sports. And lastly, the performing arts update. So, you know, we're getting ready for our school musical, the high school musical. Unfortunately, due to having to go remote for those few weeks, they decided to reschedule the performances. So they're now going to be on March 18th, 19th, and the 26th. So that's been updated on our calendar and our website. So I hope that you guys will also be able to make it. But that's my report.
Any comments or questions? Any other comments or questions from Margie?
Margie, I have a question. Mm-hmm. I know Choice is closed, but you continue to take applications. How could a family apply then? They do not go through the state website anymore, then to the Choice website? Do they go directly to ASPIDA?
They actually can still go to the Choice website. They can just go to our website, the link, you know, so that you can continue to apply through that portal. It's just that now they just go to the next, they go at the end of the wait list. So now it's, you know, first come, first served as far as like where they're placed on the wait list.
Okay, very mm-hmm. good. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else? Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
I second that.
All those in favor? Well, team, thank you so much for hanging in there. Today was a long meeting, so we'll get back on track for the February meeting. Thank you so much. Everybody have a great
everybody.
Rest of the evening.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Greg, can you make me host? Because I think, Alberto, did you still want to meet?
Yeah, sure, that works. Thanks.
Okay.
Yes, and Margie, I was going to send you a text. Can I swing by? I need to get that petty cash check. We got the transfer, so I want to swing by and get your signature.
Okay.
So I think I should be there. I'll text you, but I'll be there around 8 o'clock in your driveway.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I'll make you the host.
Margie, before you go, I have some news to share with you.
What's that?